Alrighty, counting you in, Kai.
All right.
Three and two.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Kush and Kai. I'm Kai.
I'm Kush. What's good, y'all?
Fucking Motley Crue! Woo!
Motley Kai. I just slammed some heroin, but not poop. A bump of cocaine out of a stripper's culo. I'm going to get beaked up with some JD during this podcast. But me and Laku, the second drummer from the Noi Rocks, we're going to go for a drive.
Holy shit. This movie was... The throttle was pressed all the way. It was depressed completely. This movie was not shy about titties or coke or heroin or Jack Daniels. They were like, here it is. This is what it was. There's a bunch of titties and shit.
We're talking about the 2019 Netflix release. It just came out today on this recording. We're talking about The Dirt.
Hot!
Based on the Motley Crue autobiography from 2012, directed by Jeff Tremaine. Now, if you're wondering who that guy is, he's done a lot of work with Dick House and what is that? That's Jackass. That's The Party Boys. That's that.
Oh, yeah. So Bad Grandpa.
Bad Grandpa, exactly. Screenplay by Rich Wilkes.
Wikes?
I'm totally mispronouncing that dude's name here.
That guy?
Yeah, that guy. But he's got such titles as the Jerky Boys movie under his thing. He's done Triple X. He's even got Punk Like Me, which is one of his last things.
There we go. But this is one of his first full films that Tremaine has done.
Yes. Aside from Bad Grandpa, yes.
Yes. Even though that, too, is very... Because his repertoire... And he did not go to, like, film school. There was no formal learning for how to do any of this stuff. So when he hooked up with those guys, it was all learned by doing. Very organic coming into it. And I got to say, we usually save it for the bottom of the show, but I have to, right off the top, like, I enjoyed this. This was real. This was great. This was popcorn, I have to say.
I liked it. I'm also going to recommend it. It did some things that even Straight Out of Compton and Bohemian Rhapsody didn't do, which was like acknowledge like, hey, there were some personalities that are a huge part of this history and this lore, but it's a movie and we're trying to wrap things up. So sorry, this guy who should be here actually isn't in this movie at all.
I loved
that. That was a neat little thing they did there.
I loved those because they broke the fourth wall, but they still involved a scene. But somebody was talking directly to camera and going like, hey, man. Obviously, he wasn't at this party, but he was there, and we met the guy. But this is cooler. And you're like, awesome, cool. Yeah, it's great. And it's literally doing what those other movies did, but just admitting it. So you're like, oh, cool, we're cool. That's fine. Especially because I have to say, like, so many of the details are just tragically soaked in drugs and booze and tragedy.
It's a lot of just sex, and it's a lot of drugs, and it's a lot of just melees in the hotel. Now I'm looking at the IMDb page here and it says 147 minutes, but if I swear this thing was an even 2 hours, and regardless of either one, I think this could have been maybe 20 minutes shorter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It did feel like we went down a few alleys that kind of like we retrod down them and it was like, all right, I get it. And honestly too. Okay. I was already just praising it, but if I'm going to, you know, if there's like a criticism sandwich to be had here, I have to say immediately now where, look, no, I love the breaking of the fourth wall, but usually that's a device to get us caught up into where their world is. Mm-hmm. But it was doled out evenly throughout the whole thing. Because usually the way these things go, like the emotional beats are, okay, look, we got a lot of ground to cover to get, make sure you're on the right page. Mm-hmm. And then the main story will take over, but it is kind of a wash of like, yeah, that look. And I get sometimes there isn't a grand overarching thing that happens to their world or anything. It's just kind of a life goes on. And that, those are hard. Those are hard to helm and bring together. But yeah, it did feel like it spun its wheels a little bit at times. if that's my main criticism, is like, look, it you know, they weren't, they got a number one, they did stuff, they did rehab, they got back out, but at
a point. I feel like we were forced on some emotional manipulation at the end there, though, those last 25 minutes, especially when Vince Neil is crying over his daughter, and for some reason, it felt less like a movie. It felt more like we were watching something on Lifetime now.
Fair, very fair.
I also think that could have been an entire story on its own. Vince dealing with the tragedy of his daughter. Don't absolutely acknowledge the sex and the drugs and all that nonsense. But then, no, this was my life, and I went through a rocky relationship with the wife, and went through a horrible divorce, and then the kid got cancer, and I had to tell, oh, I'm going to take you out of here, but then 4 months passed anyways, and that could be a whole story right there. That's a whole movie right there, if you want.
It is. It, very fair, it is, and yeah, no, I dig, and that is the, I would say that the criticism is that tonally, yeah, there's not hey, look, your lead is going to die of cancer, and then it's going to rock the world, and then AIDS and homosexuality, well, everyone will have to reckon with, but it's just, a booze-soaked romp, and then people sort of learn their lessons or not, and life goes on.
Well, remember, also, this movie, again, does what Bohemian Rhapsody and Straight Outta Compton didn't do, isn't it? Instead of focusing on one primary member of the band, it literally it tries to give an even story to all four members.
It does. And then they even, and
it doesn't always work.
It doesn't. And then they don't share it evenly either. It's not distributed that evenly. It's sort of who had the biggest chapter in each of those years. Mm-hmm. But they do. There is a fun narrative element where they're saying fuck, that's enough of Frank's story. Let's get to mine.
Yeah.
They make fun of each other in that way. And speaking of Frank, who became Nikki Sixx, his mom is just a straight ass. What the hell is wrong with you? the train of different stepdads is always a recipe for, well, we're going to supercharge this asshole to be an asshole. So here we go.
That could have been the movie, was the central focus on the missing part of his mom, this kid growing up on the streets. Even once he's amassed fame and success, her coming back and doing that punk out move. Then she's like, that song was really about me, right? And he's like, it's been 3 minutes. You're like, my heart broke for him right there. And the whole way he got into heroin, that could have been all of its own movie.
It could have.
And it doesn't.
It doesn't, but I did. Well, I will say, I mean, I had a note here where I was like, was this from Frank's perspective? Did he sign the rights for this to get going? Or was it all of them? Because in a way, it is kind of his
movie. This is all supposed to be based on their book, The Dirt. So all four of them are authors on the book.
That's kind of seen it. That's kind of cool, actually. But
I imagine one chapter is Nikki Sixx's perspective, and then Mark Mars,
Nick Mars.
Nick Mars, thank you.
Just from, if you wanted to pick a strand out of here, there is an argument to be made that this is Frank's emotional journey, because everyone's having these different experiences, but he's the way he goes from start to finish is that he learns something about himself, and then he understands what it is with his mom, even though that doesn't change. But then it sets up that scene where, look, I know it was schmaltzy, but when Vince Neil is breaking down and Nikki Sixx goes to comfort him, it's that is an organic thing in a way, because it's this is from a guy who was given no compassion, but he discovered in himself that he is no, he is my family. This is important. Mm-hmm. And so that journey was I saw that, I felt that. I thought that was really neat.
You're talking about the performance given by Douglas Booth, who plays Nikki Sixx.
Absolutely.
He does a great job in this.
Fucking all of these fuckers are fantastic.
Yeah.
They're really watchable in these scenes. That was great. And I will say, if I had to pick an overall theme, I'd have to say it's mostly the Nikki Sixx story. Mm-hmm. And people are sort of attached to it. Because I guess only because his journey fits to more of a narrative standard than literally everybody else's, who is just a mess in this fucking thing.
Yeah. Well, I would say the one who was the most stable was Mick Mars. And that guy is actually going through an actual degenerative bone.
I didn't know that. I did not fucking know that. Played by Ewan Rion, who was
Ramsey Bolton in Game.
Ramsey Bolton himself is up there. Two things about that. One, he's
great.
I think he has to pull it back because he's quietly more talented than everybody else. But also, he looks way more like Ozzy than the guy they got to play Ozzy. He looks way more like Ozzy than that dude. So that was confusing, but also
that's a great fantastic point.
Yeah. He was fantastic in this.
Well, no, there's nothing saying he doesn't go on to play Ozzy in the next Ozzy.
Could we please get the Ozzy movie with Ewan Rowan? Rian, please.
I'm sure there's several scripts floating around for that.
There have to be. Because Ozzy's story, too. Like, this story was crazy. But then their opening for Ozzy, it's like, kick open that door. Ozzy, you're still alive. Please do it. Please.
What did you think of Ozzy Osbourne's 5 minutes in this movie?
Like, okay, that was gross, and I get that was rock and roll, I guess, but there's a scene where they're touring around, and they're like, I don't know, in Yuma, Arizona, at a motel around a pool, and they're drinking, and then I think it was Ozzy Osbourne comes out, he snorts ants.
He's wearing a woman's sundress, by the way.
Yes, and he tries to offer somebody money from his butt, and that doesn't go great. And then he flashes people on the other side, and then he snorts ants off the pool deck.
That's been a legend up there with the biting of the head off.
While I was watching it, I was like, I know this has to be real, because if you wrote this into a general, like, we're making fun of Rockstar script, it would be rejected for being too ridiculous. Like, this is so over the top. I'm like, this is a... Look, this director is pretty breezy, and they're kind of moving through stuff. This detail would not be included unless it was some kind of lore, like unless this happened.
I gotta tell you, by the end of the Ozzy Osbourne scene, I got that. Do you remember being at that party in high school, and then there was that dude who was slightly older and definitely a few years in college who shouldn't have been there?
Oh boy.
That's Ozzy Osbourne by 10, and still just trying to like go, I can party harder than any of you fuckers. You're not going to drink up your own piss. I'm going to drink your piss.
Like, that was, I mean, that guy sold it, but it was just, yeah, I had to turn my head a little bit because it was like, oh, God. I know it's Gatorade, but still, it was like.
The idea of it. The idea of it is awful. Yeah,
but that was that. He's metal. Dude, he's punk rock there. I can't, you know, I can't deny his bona fides. Ozzy has been there. Jesus fuck. Where do I want to start? Oh, you know who really came through? Because over the years, I've heard, I mean, I wasn't super into any VH1 behind the musics or even like following bands or what they were about. So it's a bit alien to me. However, I have gotten to know Tommy Lee through his various.
Okay.
Media exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And
played by Colson Baker, aka Machine Gun Kelly.
Machine Gun Kelly. And he captured, there's like an innocence and a warmness to, and an enthusiasm to Tommy Lee.
Like a cousin to Matthew Lillard or something. But
oh my God.
Every time he pops up in this movie, Machine Gun Kelly as Tommy Lee, like he's just like, dude, we're going to do this thing. We're going to rock hard.
I was inspired every fucking time. It was great. And I've gotten that from every Tommy Lee interview where he's like, no, man, it was really cool. It was like, yeah, absolutely. I think as Adam Carolla has said about him, he's one of those people that, oh no, when he was three, he was banging on pots and pans, and it was like he was going to be a drummer in this band or some other one. Like, he's just an undeniable talent. And he actually was the odd man out in this group for being like, his family was super normal-ish and supportive, and he, you know what I mean? Like, and also too, they kick off when he's a young Tommy Lee, still in high school. His family is so sweet, and
they're very supportive. They're like, "Hey, I hope you have a great time." Oh, you got a new girlfriend? That's great.
I fucking love it. Yeah. And then he's wearing his sister's pants, which sets up several wearing women's pants running jokes in this movie that they take great care with. He runs out, so he has the most normalish, but still coming into this to be like, "I want to be a rock God," and fucking the 80s was wanting to welcome him with open fucking arms.
He's a delight to watch in this movie. The dude Machine Gun Kelly is starting to become an up and coming actor. I don't know much about his music. I know he got booed out of the building during WrestleMania one year, but he was just in Captive State last week. You may have seen him on Netflix's Bird Box. He was on the TV series Roadies. Oh, no wonder I coined the Matthew Lillard reference. He's in Salt Lake City Punk 2. He's going to be doing big things after this movie. Check him out.
I've seen his name a few times, and I'm like, what else is he? Yeah, Bird Box, but there's got a few more things, too. Anyway, good stuff. It is good stuff. I loved Mick Mars coming in as the slightly older guy. He's a Brit. And one of his first actions in the band is to fire the original guitarist that they had.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Like, hey, you're fucking out. It was just, are you going to let this happen and nobody else wants to take charge? And you're like, yeah, obviously Mick is one of the cores of this band because he gives a shit. And you're like, oh, fucking awesome.
He's got a great introduction where he just shows up with all this gear. He does something that they've never seen before, and they like it, and they think it's going to be an absolute addition and an asset to their band. But then the original guitarist, like you said, is just like, hey, hold on, man. You want to turn down the noise a little so I can hear myself over here? And then it's like, yeah, you've got to go. Like, Ramsey Bolton just murders him right there.
Yeah, he is done and out, and away we go. And then the next piece they need to pick up after having all of the instrumentals down is Finding Vince Neil was fantastic. He's just singing at a cover band during a party. I like that in the Breaking the Fourth Wall, he's not speaking to camera, but he's narrating to the audience where he goes, "Nah, there's no way I'd fucking call them back," because Tommy Lee's super excited. He's like, "Check out our tape, man." And then he's all coked up. He's at his girlfriend's house. Somebody's sucking his dick. And then he course corrects and says, "Well, you know, Tommy let me sleep in his van when I ran away. So maybe I will call him back." So it was just a complete double back on that. And it was just, that totally worked in the moment. It was like, yeah, all right. And yeah, dude, hearing just Livewire, hearing them do it in the studio or on stage, like, fucking fantastic. That was great.
Yeah, this movie is definitely accompanied with a great soundtrack. I mean, if you like Motley Crue, they play all the top hits. Real life performances, as with Bohemian Rhapsody, the guys actually had to learn how to play Motley Crue music and perform for the band themselves. So that was the whole thing there.
And speaking of which, like, I'm jumping to the end again, but it doesn't really matter with this fucking thing. But when they did the put-togethers of side by side of the Dirt and then historical footage, I was like, holy shit. Some of the moves and mannerisms that they got down was like, wow, you guys fucking studied this and then nailed it. Yeah, I was impressed. I mean, that was, they did an honorable job of like, oh no, here's what it looks like.
I would love to know how much the budget was, but because it's Netflix, they're not giving up squat on it. So
right, yeah, they're tight.
But yeah, a lot of attention and care and detail was put into this movie.
Where do we go from there? Oh yeah, Livewire, and that vaults them to success. Tommy Lee burning cockroaches with the torch is, or he just has the hairspray or whatever that was.
The hairspray and a Zippo. But yeah, he's melting cockroaches into the shag floor of their Los Angeles apartment.
That is so funny.
What did you think about the opening of this? Because I forget where I heard it or how I heard it, but the emphasis on don't miss the opening in this movie here. Like, you'll never forget it. Like, it actually, you know, we introduced our characters or whatever, but the whole thing is like, you're supposed to be shocked that a chick squirts on film.
We all have the internet, everybody. What are we, yeah. What? Wait, are we shocked? Is this weird? No, this is pro forma here. This isn't anything new. I mean, what? Are you?
So the shock value did nothing for you either.
I was like, well, again, I'm in a space where I was expecting like some crazy shit to go down. And so that's just sort of like checked the box. So gotcha. I wasn't, yeah, I'm like, great. No, they did that. But yeah, he was a poon hound. Many of them were. But, and then, wait, hold on. After Tommy Lee burning cockroaches, they go to them picking the name, and then Mick comes up with Motley Crue, and then it's edited to be spelled differently with the umlauts. Mm-hmm. I love the heat around different organizations in the name-picking scene. That's I like that. So I think theirs was good. It's akin to which movie had a better post-credit sequence. It's also which movie had the picking the name scene. or even in the 90s, which movie traced the call the best from the villain. It's a ritual. It is. Mm-hmm.
They skip over that in Bohemian Rhapsody. It's like,
oh no.
And now the band's name is Queen. They're like, oh, okay.
Oh, they could have made that into a thing. So their first show, they're ready to go on stage. And again, Vince is joking how his girlfriend spent $800 on the leather pants that he's wearing.
Yes.
More running pants jokes, women's pants, which is fantastic. And then their first show turns into a fucking... This, again, this is another thing that has to be true, because when they get really specific, is like, yeah, no, they wanted to pay homage to this story, but their first show turns into a melee with them coming off stage and just beating the shit out of hecklers. And then they get back up, and one person's like, woo! Motley Crue! And then they start playing again, and then the legend is launched.
The legend is born.
Oh, that is...
It's a great scene, too. Just like Vince Neil standing up for Nikki Six. Those two are just brawling, and then Tommy's like, you know I'm getting in on this, brah! And he stage dives into the crowd on some biker asshole, and then Mick Mars is doing it. He never leaves the stage. He's like, I guess I'll just kick this guy in the face.
Yeah, somebody comes up and he just fucking foots somebody right.
We don't even know that guy was going to be aggressive. Yeah, he just kicks the dude in the face.
Unaware if they were one of the belligerents, but Mick deals out foot justice. Jesus fuck. Oh, God. Pete Davidson's role in this is fantastic.
Let's talk about Pete Davidson.
Okay, so, what's up?
Is this guy funny?
I don't know. I like his stand-up more than his SNL work.
So he does stand-up?
He does.
Okay.
Which I do, you know, I don't hate it. It's fine. He's trying to make and be. Look, I'll allow. Look, there are some people that were on SNL that were not great while they were on it. They took a long time to sort of stew and get together. But I trust Lorne Michaels with this. He knows how to find the funny ones. So I'm not judging there, but I like Pete in this role. He did a good job.
I guess he did a job. I don't know. I mean, his whole role is, hey, I want to hire you. Okay, now I've hired you. Hey, has anyone seen my girlfriend? Oh, hey, girlfriend, you weren't just getting fucked by Nikki Six, were you? That's good.
It was Vince Neil. Vince Neil fucked his girlfriend.
No, I'm sure everybody fucked Pete Davidson.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And then it seems like they all had, if clap came to one of them, they all had it. It's just one of those things. I feel like the blowjob girl under the table that they had for several scenes.
She seemed to live under that table too.
Yeah, she has an apartment. There's a little hatch. She has a studio apartment under there. She just lives down there.
Under the tablecloth, it's an entire vista.
They pay for her. It's $800 a month at the Viper Room under a table. There, she just has an apartment. She lives there. She's it's a student abroad kind of a thing. You know, it's an opportunity. Then you go to UCLA. You take some classes. It's fine. But he was terrified by a random, unexpected blowjob, and they all laughed.
I'll give him that. That's fine.
Yeah. The job that it was, which is like, look, you know, sometimes it's not fun to play the straight man or the reactionary, but he was earnest, kind of trying to make it guy. And then he got to break the fourth wall, which was like, you never leave your girlfriend around Motley Crue. They will fuck her.
Yes.
And it was like, look, it was basic. It was direct. But, you know, I that was fine for me. I was like, great. He did a good job. That was good. Well, because
I feel it's also because of scenes like that that we don't like Motley Crue that much.
Yeah. Why should we? Why should we like this band?
Yeah. Again, with Nikki Six ODing in the closet multiple times, it's hard to just go like, I feel his pain. You know, he at one point he does get out of rehab and his life should feel better, but then it's only after something else happens.
Yeah.
After rehab, then he goes, oh, been doing it all wrong this entire time. But Tommy Lee, I'm sorry about Heather Locklear.
I don't. Also, too, you just said Heather Locklear, I was waiting. But can you imagine as a casting director where you're like, we're looking for a young Heather Locklear type? Like, holy shit.
Yeah. Good casting on that.
She was a stone cold fox. That chick was hot. I try not to stray this way. These words could be used against me, but oh my God. Yeah. Young, young Heather Locklear. Like that's an assignment right there. That's the person you're looking for. Oh, fantastic. Double hand clap. Yeah, you know, at the same time, I did realize, and I think this adds to, it does go in a circle sometimes where you're like, yeah, you know, they're doing this, that, whatever. It is that, you know, I did feel for them, like there are some human-y moments, but it didn't feel like they were asking us to just forgive them for being terrible. Mm-hmm. They were just like, yeah, we did that shit. Yeah, we made a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. These are sort of the thing. And so, you know, while I don't blame them for it, this isn't an overall feel-good story, it can't rise to the level of, like, this isn't a call to action or you should treat artists this way. This is really just a telling of shit was crazy, man. And it's kind of amazing it's kind of amazing they're not dead. Vis-a-vis a car crash with Vince Neil is like, yeah, this is kind of incredible that none of us died.
I'm going to read some headlines off the news since this movie's been out a full 15 hours now.
Excellent.
The Atlantic headline, The Dirt Celebrates the Soullessness of Motley Crue.
There you go.
The ATV Club says, Motley Crue biopic The Dirt makes even the viewer feel the need to shower afterward.
Uh-huh.
The Muse reports, The Dirt treats its women characters like trash.
It does. That happens.
Louder. Motley Crue's The Dirt. Funny, believable, and appalling. And then finally, Vulture states, The Dirt offers a sanitized history of Motley Crue.
A sanitized version.
They're saying this that shit went harder.
I believe that, too. I mean, the shit that they must have pulled. Like, there's a scene that they, I think, encapsulates the height of, oh God, what's his name? David Costable. He's a total that guy. He's in Breaking Bad, Billions, Flight of the Conchords, Suits, The Wire.
All the shows I don't watch.
He was their manager.
Oh, okay, that guy. He's great.
That guy. There's a scene like where Tommy Lee is describing his day. Fucking. When this dude comes in to like,
that's a fun POV segment too, FYI.
Like, that is. Although, again, that comes like late too for like, what's a day in the life like? And they do it, and I appreciate it, and it's enlightening, but it is also like, oh shit, this is kind of deep in the movie for a, you know, like a montage. Yeah. But yeah, it turns into just, yeah, no, their shit is crazy. I forget where you started with that because I locked eyes on David Costable, and he is one of my favorite that does. And Billions is in full swing this season, and he plays an integral role. Mm-hmm. How did we start from here again? Oh my God. Kush, wait a minute. Come back. I'm looking at his eyes. He's disarming. God damn. Stop
looking at his. Wow.
Where did we just come from this? Oh, yeah. No.
Constable.
Sorry. Wait. I got it. The thing that really is, I think, the core to this movie is there's a scene where Tommy Lee Jones is running down a hallway.
Tommy Lee Jones. I've been waiting for someone to do that in this pod.
Absolutely. Running. Tommy Lee Jones is running. Tommy Lee is running down a hallway with a guitar, just smashing lights with the guitar in his underwear.
Yes.
And then they cut to a story at very after the credits. Tommy Lee is telling this story on a motorcycle to a camera, like as they're just driving along, like, and it was like, oh, this fucking happened. And then people in the hotel called and said, there's a guy in his underwear with dark long hair and he's just smashing lights, and they didn't know what to do. And it was like, that was like a description for the movie. It was, this worked. It didn't make any sense. It was crazy that it worked, but here's what it took. And
what else is great about that scene is, sorry to cut you off there, is that I was under the impression that we were starting another music video segment.
Oh, no.
It's just so unbelievable, and there is a soundtrack accompanying it. And then I forget if it's just Tommy Lee or if it ends up being Nikki Sixx, but one of them is just crawling through the broken glass. I was just like,
yeah,
this is insane, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of very cool scenes in this. I think a lot of them just run long. And by long, even like half a minute would you know, half a minute shorter in all of these scenes would have made the movie just that much tighter, you know?
Definitely. I agree. But yeah, we got out of there, what was it, an hour or 45 or so?
I feel like this movie was 2 hours, but the IMDb
I did too. I did. That's never a good thing that it feels longer than it is.
Well, like, so I remember pausing it at one point, just, you know, to take a piss, refresh my drink, smoke a bowl. And it was like 56 minutes has elapsed, 54 minutes to go. And maybe that's still an hour 47. I don't know, but.
You could have cut a bunch of shenanigans and we still would have got the point that the whole movie was about shenanigans.
Well, we go deep into the Nikki Sixx's drug habit. Yes. It's a great intro too, because Vince Neil goes to jail for what should be 30 days, which should be longer than that too, but it only ends up to being about 19. He's like, you know, I never visited Vince in jail. Vince Neil, FYI, got into a DUI car accident. And killed the drummer of Hanoi Rocks.
Yes.
That was that reference at the top of the show, kids. And he went to jail only for a month, ended up paying like $2.5 million in restitution. A lot of people are still upset about it to this day. However, Nikki Sixx goes deeper than it. He's like, never visited him in jail, never sent him a care package, never sent him a phone call. Oh, at first, you're thinking like, oh, he fucked his woman. Because he's going, he's like, I fell in love with her. Like, she was...
That would have fit, yeah.
Glamorous. Like, it's a great scene, too, because it's this naked woman, servant, walking up to him with, like, a silver platter. But on that,
a lot of coke off silver platters, too.
This platter has a syringe.
Yes,
full of heroin. Mm-hmm. Or morphine, or whatever.
Heroin.
Of course.
Big boy. Sorry. It's
a fantastic lighting. It's a good mood, and it illustrates the next 40 minutes of this movie, because they go hard with this to the point where, like, you see the junk coursing through his veins, and then eventually the veins are dying, and, like, to the point where he's, like, shooting into the neck.
It was so intense that for Nikki Sixx that even Tommy Lee threw up on a stripper. That's how intense it was. That it caused a bandmate to vomit on a stripper's ass. And then we kind of, on that drug ride we were just talking about from Nikki Sixx, like, it kind of culminates at that level of the marriage of Tommy and young Heather Locklear. And they are all just a gaggle of booze and drug-soaked disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, like, it is pathetic. After that, they even get back together, and Nikki is still just all fucked up on the stuff. And he knocks over a glass table. Like, that performance of him trying to get up and walk, and he knocks over that glass table and then falls in it, is just the most pathetic thing.
How he didn't break the actual damn table. I'm totally expecting him to just go through and, like, you know, more blood. And
he'd, like, Charlie Chaplin's that thing where he is, like, fighting with it and trying to get up, but you're like, oh, my God. Like, you feel bad for
bad for Tommy Lee.
Absolutely. And then...
you feel bad also for Mick Mars, because he actually, like, this man is always in constant pain, and he, like, stands up, and he's like, I'll be your best man. And then he's like, no way, bro!
He calls him drummer, too, still, which is also like, all right, I dig.
That was a fun one. Just Mick being Mick.
Yeah, again, that does feel on brand there. And then a scene right in there, as long as we're talking about it, the EMTs, after they bring Nikki back with the multiple heart, the adrenaline
shot
into the heart. They do two of them, but the EMTs high five after he comes back to life was just such a great detail. Like, yeah!
You know what? Why not? Not only should they high five that they brought back Nikki Sixx, but he also managed to get the second needle into the first hole.
Yes!
Like, that was some Robin Hood shit, okay?
Yes. Another detail, I didn't know they all went to rehab together or tried to be, like, co-sober.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, but that's usually the downfall of a band is when they get sober.
Okay, that's a codependency is a bitch, and it will defeat you. that shit doesn't... You have to be... Look, first and foremost, you have to be about yourself, so that's a super easy way to get off the wagon.
There's a whole thing here when they finally go sober. They end up just because they got all this pent-up energy that they need to spend it. And so what do? They go on like, you know, a 370-day tour.
That 89 tour was insane.
And when it bleeds just very deep into 1990 by the montage we're given. Like,
and that just the like dates October and places that they show, that is fucking crazy. Listen, for anybody else out there, I mean, look, yeah, you can say, oh, no, the rock stars are doing this, whatever. Just imagine staying in a different motel for 60 days in a row. Just try it. You will be an insane person.
Try it for 10 days.
You'll be an insane person at the end of it. Like, you won't have any sense of place or what's going on or who you used to love. Like,
and just ridiculous locations, too. Like, the first show was obviously in Hollywood, but then the second show, two days
in Germany. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I'm glad you caught that.
Well, they went all over the fucking world. But, yeah, people, like, that is... It is a talent and a skill to be able to just produce being a rock star on that level. And again, it's not surprising that, yeah, we love the music, but we're fucking people up here. Like, sometimes it chews you up and spits you out. But part of that is...
And that tour just absolutely kills the band, not just the members themselves, but the lives around them. So, like... Tommy Lee's marriage collapses. Nikki Sixx becomes a bigger heroin addict. Vince Neil's wife is leaving him. And Mick Mars ends up, you know, he has to go on to pain medication or whatever. Like, he's definitely popping pills. I think they're prescribed, but we don't get much detail about that because, again, he's got the degenerative bone syndrome.
Yeah, which is a bummer. I didn't know that either going through the thing. Yeah, I guess after this, I mean, they get to... the arc of Vince Neil, his daughter has the stomach tumor, which just
heartbreaking. FYI, like it's definitely a heart tugger.
Jesus fuck! And again, yeah, as a movie, we could say, "Oh, why would they throw that in there? That's crazy." But it's like, well, that's life. That happens. And then you don't need to have a daughter to be like, "Oh my god, that's just fucking awful." But they process it through the movie, and then they come together. And as I said. Yeah, that scene was touching, especially just to see Nikki Sixx develop his own sense of compassion and feel that this is a person that you need to support, even though you've been apart. And that was cool. Like, I mean, if there's anything to this movie, it was the journey to that moment. And yeah, this story, again, seems like crazy improbable for all these fucking druggy assholes.
But that whole section of the movie where we're dealing with Vince Neil's daughter, it feels weird because before that we maybe get 4 minutes of interaction with his daughter, and who knows, maybe he only had 4 minutes of interaction with his own daughter because of that damn tour. But like, there should be like, this is the most important person to me. Like, I never cared about another soul before my own, before this child. And now she's got the cancer, and that's why it's just, but aside of being your own child, that's why it's heartbreaking. But instead of just like, oh, I've got a kid, and now she has cancer. Oh, shit. Here we go. That's what I got out of it. I'm sorry.
No, I dig. But again, I think, we're looking at it and examining it. But one of the reasons where it doesn't fit neatly into a box or something is that they did a slice of life kind of a thing. And I think I want to give them more credit for it being at least interesting on a few different levels, even if it doesn't succeed as a total arc. Because, you know what I mean? When you do a big four-person biography thing, like, everyone has a piece to add, and it, you know, they didn't all die in a plane crash. So there's not, like, a period to put on the set. Yeah. I think that's all of the notes that I had.
Yeah. I've literally seen this movie maybe 5 hours ago.
I saw it last night.
Overall, very enjoyable. Very enjoyable. Yeah, I wish I had a better sound system for my TV because the dialogue is very low, but the music is very loud.
That is a classic problem for these fucking shits. I had the the subtitles turned out.
Me too. And that's only how I knew who was narrating it from that point, because
yes,
most of their voices sound the same. So if I didn't have that on, I would think like, oh, Nikki Sixx just kind of changed an inflection there. The very end of the movie is them walking up the stairs to their next concert, the band reunited again.
Yeah, it doesn't end ever. It just is like, yeah! Motley Crue forever. You're like, okay, that's great.
The final title card is, and then they win another 20 years. And you're like, oh my god.
Yeah, no, I'm on board with like, okay, all right, all right, everybody.
We should be glad it just ended there.
Yeah, they could have, they just them, you know what I mean, like them going to school or having appearances on late night shows. Like, no, that was good. That was good. We got it. We got it. We got it.
I will say one thing I'm disappointed in is when Tommy Lee's relationship with Heather Locklear breaks up, they refer to Pam Anderson as a porn star. Mm-hmm. And it's true, she had done Playboy, but she wasn't necessarily a porn star until she married Tommy Lee.
Yeah, that was
I thought invented. That was some weird.
She was not a porn star. That wasn't the appeal at that level. And we have to pay homage to Pamela in that way. I think that was actually the first piece of internet porn that I saw was their sex tape. That was the first like downloaded thing I got that took over dial up for fucking ever.
Oh my god.
It was worth it. So indelible part of my adolescence. So thank you, Tommy Lee. Any other closing thoughts on this movie?
It's a good movie. If you don't like needles, be prepared to cover your eyes a couple times.
Oh yeah, there's a few pretty specific scenes there.
It's weird to think that this movie is only TVMA because it's through Netflix. Like,
holy cow. I mean, the amount of titties and coke in there is amazing for that. For just like, you can get this if you click not kids. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then I am excited for more Jeff Tremaine projects. Like, fucking, yeah, dude, fucking keep serving it up. I want to see what you do.
He did a good job. This should have been shaved down just, you know, 15, 20 minutes tops. Overall, very good.
Well, the editor was a woman, so we
understand. Oh,
shit. Kush, how could you do that? How dare you? How dare you? You knew it was.
I had no idea.
Oh, my God.
I sincerely apologize to all women.
Thank you. Thank you. See, we needed that for healing, for him to say that. There are no call-outs for that reason.
Oh, yeah. Also, don't – never punch a woman, but women, don't expect to not get punched if you call Tommy Lee's mom a cunt or anyone's mom a cunt.
Don't call people's moms a cunt. Like, I don't advocate hitting women, but, like, why the fuck are you calling somebody's mom a cunt repeatedly?
Five times.
What the fuck is with – look, Tommy Lee, calm it down. Don't hit women. But also, lady, what's your deal where you need to call somebody's mom a cunt?
Your fiance's mom a cunt, FYI.
Obvious early signs that this shit is not going to work out. those are issues. So that and, yeah. Fuck. Yeah, well, I would recommend.
Don't call anyone's mom a cunt.
Don't call anyone's mom a cunt. Would you recommend?
Unless maybe it's Mickey Six, then maybe he'd be like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, no, okay, wait a minute. We just broke our own rule because I'm like, no, she was a cunt. So
I guess it depends on the person. Like, yeah, Mickey Six would be like, oh, Deanna, you've heard from her? How's she doing?
It is on a cunt-by-cunt basis. I think you can't judge. You can't judge ahead of time. That's what we've learned. Thank you for joining us. Visit us on the web, cushionguy.com. Cush is always rocking. Awesome reviews. Get him up there. He's going to be on Rotten Tomatoes. That's what's going to happen. Check out the Bosley for some awesome content. And as always, Kush, rock the fuck on!
Rock on, cat! On!
Hi, this is Jenny Powell, and my new podcast, Brazen Conscious and Contagious, is now available on thebosley.net. When I was asked to do this podcast, it was important for me to be able to reach people on a very basic human level, which for me means I'm doing this work too. So anything to do with change, anything that has to do with inviting wellness into our lives, I wanted it to be available in a way that others knew that they weren't alone in this process. that just because what makes us teachers in this life doesn't mean that we arrived well and ready to teach. We actually had our own unique process in going through these steps in life. So it is my honor and my privilege to not only share the things that I have learned and discovered within myself, but also have had the privilege to have this information passed down to me and readily available to share with the rest of the world. So I thank you so much for listening. And to catch my new episodes every other Monday, they're available on major podcasts and are found including on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thank you so much, and I can't wait to connect with you on Brazen, Conscious, and Contagious exclusively through thebosley.net.
Thebosley.net.
Sit, Bosley, sit.
I can party harder than any of you fuckers. Ah.